Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, on Friday, the Lions vanquished the New York Giants 21-16 in their first preseason tilt at Ford Field. Meaningless results. You know, it's just a preseason game. Stuff happened. Mm-hmm. You know, just a culmination of plays from both sides. Lions came away with the win. There was some good. There was some bad.
I'll tell you what. When I was talking to Jeremy about the game, too, he said the same thing. It's a meaningless win or loss. And I completely agree. At the same time, guys like Chris Spielman and Dan Campbell, those wins are important. They believe that winning every time you take the field is an opportunity to, like, learn how to win. Right. And so Dan Campbell was on that live feed with Peter Schrager. I'm sorry. Chris Spielman was live on the feed at the end of the game. And Chris was like yelling grit, grit. And look at that guy dip. And like he was very excited, very animated. But yeah, so I mean, you could tell it, the winning still means something to the former players. And I think it sets a tone. And while, yes, it is completely insignificant in a lot of ways, they love the value of what it brings aesthetically, I guess. Right. So, yeah. But, you know, we talked about this before we started. This game is not about, you know, play by play and blow by blow of what happened. And instead, it's about learning about how the position groups set up against themselves and things that happened that were good and bad. And so we'll approach this podcast episode like we do all of them during the off season and go position by position, breaking stuff down.
You know, neither of them can. I mean, I guess in the heat of battle, they could be saying that somewhat seriously, but you know, Dan Campbell he's aware of the 2008 preseason Detroit Lions.
Oh, I'm sure he was on that team, right?
I know he was on the team. Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. He did go 4-0 in a preseason, and then those wins helped them learn how to win, and then they went out and lost all 16 games.
Yeah. I'm with you. At the same time, Chris Spielman, very excitable.
Right. Well, they all are. It's a big crew of excitable guys. Yep. So in the spirit of kind of what you were just saying about preseason games, we're not going to do a blow by blow of the game because it's kind of meaningless. We're going to go position by position like we have been over the past couple of episodes, because that's what we're trying to set up. We're setting up with the 53 man roster. We're setting up what the regular season will end up looking like. So yeah, we'll start with the quarterback position as we normally do. Jared Goff and the newly signed Teddy Bridgewater, number 50 in your playbooks, your program. Neither of them suited up and played. We did get a healthy dosage of both Nate Sudfeld and Adrian Martinez. What we saw to Nate Sudfeld, I don't think anybody much liked, and they made all the more reason to be pleased that Teddy Bridgewater was signed. At the same time, though, could you say Sudfeld was maybe felt a little too much pressure after the signing of Teddy Bridgewater? Who knows?
Oh, I think so. I think, like, okay, so if you go back to last week, he didn't look very good on that Saturday practice. And then, like, they signed Teddy, like, the next day, and or on Monday, I think, is when it broke. And then after that, I don't think Sudfeld has looked right yet. And it's tough to throw downfield when you're looking over your backwards over your shoulder, right?
Oh, boy. So cliche.
So, but I feel like that's what he's doing. Like, I feel like he's feeling the pressure. He's trying to force stuff. He had two interceptions. You could argue that the first one was on Matt Nelson.
I think it was a little bit on both of them. You know, that was my first reaction to you when it happened. It's like, oh, it's Matt Nelson. Then when you watch the replay, it's like, hey, he might have held on to that ball for a little too long.
He could have checked down too. He had a target underneath he could have went to, but I think he kind of had JMO on his mind right off the bat, right? I think that was his let's go deep and try and get JMO involved. And Maybe that was a decision that they told him to do. You know what I mean? Or maybe he just saw something there and tried to take advantage. Either way, that was a unfortunate pick. The second one was bad throw. It was high. It was behind him. And so, it was not a great night. I thought his pocket presence was okay. But, like, at the end of the day, he looks like a man who's shaken and not comfortable in his position. And I think it's all very clear that Goff is the number one quarterback on this team. Bridgewater is going to be the number two. They love Teddy Bridgewater. Like, he's going to be the guy that backs up Jared Goff. There's no question he is QB2. And the question then will be, is Nate Sudfeld good enough to be QB3 and worth keeping around on the roster? And I can say, through the first 2 weeks of training camp, he made a pretty good argument for himself. But then the last week during joint practices, during the game, pretty dismal, and I would say not an encouraging sign that the Lions would keep three. Now, he's got a couple more weeks to prove himself, and we'll see how that goes. But I think it's very clear the pecking order right now. It's like Martinez versus a roster spot. Sudfeld versus a roster spot. I don't think Martinez is in the conversation. Yes, he scored the game-winning touchdown.
Heroic.
He was also playing against the third or fourth string of the Giants. So, like, he should look good there. He had a dismal first 3 weeks of camp. Like, even through the practices, he flashed a little bit in the last like week or so, but it was not NFL level play. Now, could he keep him around for the practice squad? Certainly. I mean, they've got five quarterbacks on the roster. Maybe Martinez is their QB3 on the practice squad type of thing. But for me, I think he's trying to get to the practice squad. Sudfeld's making a case for the roster. And right now, I don't know if he did enough to keep him in that spot.
Yeah, you know, at the very least, you should be looking at it as like, well, this is my audition for somebody else. Like, I won't disappear from this league yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's how he ended up in Detroit. Right, yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly, so.
All right, so I mean, that's pretty much all we have to cover with the quarterbacks. My feelings are that both Sudfeld and Martinez will be good. I don't know if you'd make Martinez a practice squad type guy, because if Goff gets hurt, like, and Hendon Hooker's still not, you know, on the path to healthiness, like, mm-hmm. you're going to make Adrian Martinez. You already made this investment, you know, and Teddy Bridgewater be your backup quarterback, and you're going to sit with Adrian Martinez as your second stringer if Goff gets hurt. Like, when they just go out and try to get Nate Sudfeld back or go find somebody else that's mm-hmm. sitting on the trash heap, you know, just if the aspirations are that great.
I mean, they might just like his ability to be a scout team quarterback right now. No, and they think that he has enough developmental upside that they may just say, you're going to be on the practice squad all year, kind of like what they did with Obin Azay last year, and say, hey, you're going to develop, and we're going to see where you're at a year from now. And if there is an injury, maybe they will go in another direction. But I could see them liking him enough to say, let's just park him on this practice squad and see what happens.
All right, let's flip over to the running back group. All right, so David Montgomery did not play for obvious reasons. Craig Reynolds and Jamar Jefferson both injured going into the game. Neither of them played. We did see Jahmyr Gibbs. We got a heavy dosage of him on the ground. Didn't do anything mm-hmm. great on the ground. Made the nice play through the air, you know, the nice yep. catch and run. Also saw Muhammad Ibrahim, who left with an injury, much to my dismay. And also, Divine Azigbo, and Benny Snell.
Yeah, I think, you know, the impression that you get with Gibbs is that the offensive line was not playing well and not really giving him a whole lot of opportunities. The Lions were keeping things very vanilla with the blocking scheme. And so you could see those little flashes of athleticism, the ability to get lateral quickly, the ability to get out in space and then create a target that where he can make a reception. So those were positive things. When he gets behind a better offensive line, he should do even better. Ibrahim played one series, got hurt, left for a series, came back, tried to play, and then had to exit again. So he was limping. He was pretty gingerly limping in the locker room after the game, and he hasn't he didn't practice on Monday. So we're recording these ahead of Jaguars joint practices. So we'll see if he comes back for the Jaguars or not. It would be in his best interest if he could, because Reynolds and Jefferson are going to start making their way back, and it's going to be a competition. And if Ibrahim is not available, that's really just going to, it's going to be detrimental, I think, to his chances. Azigbo, he was just a big body to me. Snell looked good, but again, for a fourth round pick who has 4 years experience in the league, he should look good against a bunch of third stringers, and he did. But again, 3.8 yards per carry against the Giants' third string defense. It's not
nothing to write home about.
It's not moving the needle for me at all. So, I still think Craig Reynolds is in that lead for the RB3 spot. If they keep an RB4, it's probably Jefferson, and unless one of these other three guys that played the majority of the game can do anything to get back in the conversation. I know there's a lot of people who like Snell. That's fine.
Well, yeah, he's a known commodity.
Yeah.
And if everybody's hurt, why wouldn't you keep that? I guess once again, if you're a team with higher aspirations, you're probably going to keep the veteran. If everybody else, if Reynolds and Jefferson remain hurt, you know, I think he's kind of looking up right now. Snell is, but
sure.
If those other things happen.
Yeah, I'm not ruling him out. I'm just not ready to anoint him either.
33 carries for 97 yards. That's what the group did as a whole. And you blamed the offensive line, which I believe is fair.
Yeah.
And that's, we'll get to into a little bit. But Lions ran a lot of plays in this game. They got to run 68 plays. They kept the balance between the run and the pass. But yeah, nothing to write home about when it came to the running backs. You had one touchdown out of the group, and it wasn't even a running back. It was the game winner,
right,
by Martinez, you pointed out just a little bit ago. So, yeah, we've got a lot to look for. We got to see Gibbs. We got to see there's a lot to look forward to with them, which we kind of knew already, but we all kind of see it. We kind of saw it in person or on TV. So, you know, it's good to see.
Unfortunately, this is, I think, going to kind of be a theme for the Jaguars as well, is we're going to see a lot of starter reps during the week in joint practices, and come game time, you're going to see a lot of backups. It is going to be nationally televised. It is going to be the game that NFL Network shows live in addition.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, but unfortunately, because of the joint practices, those audiences aren't even going to really get it to see a lot of the superstars, because I don't think the coaches are going to look at the national attention and then be like, well, maybe I'll play Penei Sewell. No, I mean, Panay's not going to play like that. He's going to get all his reps in joint practices, and then he won't play in the game. And that'll be true of a lot of it. So I'm kind of expecting a similar type of a game coming up this week as well.
All right. So moving on to the wide receivers group, this is probably the one group everybody would want to just see the guys lower on the depth chart playing in. Obviously, number one, because this is all we're going to see of Jameson Williams until week 7. But then after that, it was Antoine Green, Chase Cota, Trey Quinn, Dylan Drummond, Maurice Alexander, with all of all the normal names out. Denzel Mims, Trinity Benson out due to injury. But Josh Reynolds, St. Brown, Raymond Jones, none of them suited up. So we got, and all Jameson Williams did was develop more discussion about Jameson Williams and his future as a Lion.
He was the target on both interceptions. He made two good catches. He had a drop, and he had a really nice 2-point conversion. The yardage was minimal, I think like 18 yards or something like that. If you were not happy with JMO heading into that game, you're probably still not happy with him. If you were optimistic about him, you're probably looking at that 2-point conversion and saying, well, that's the potential that he has. And you know, that's tough. That he made, it was a tough catch. He made it look easy. And so, look,
No arguing the talent. I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of people arguing his talent. I guess the one part of his talent they would argue is his hands, but
Yeah.
you know, I think everybody's kind of in agreement on what Williams is capable of. I
Yeah.
guess the issue is like, is he ever going to be capable of it? And is he wasting his talent at this point? And I really think this is way too early for all these discussions,
Yeah,
but
it really is, because he missed half of last season, and so he's going to miss a third of this season. It's like a rookie year. It's like an extended rookie year for him. So, I think there is still a big learning curve for him to go through.
as Campbell said as much. Did you like when they had to, didn't they have to, no, they had, yeah, they had to fetch him after the Maurice Alexander punt return for touchdown to make sure he got on the field for the 2-point conversion. People got upset about that. And then he was defended because it's like, well, at least he's celebrating with his teammates. Like he's a lightning rod for
Yeah.
any little thing.
Oh yeah, every little thing, right? And the thing that makes me feel confident with him is that the you know the, there there's again, I'm gonna go back, I'm gonna keep throwing cliches out here. There's the old adage of game recognizes game, right? Of a good player can recognize good players, right? And when you listen to the people on the Lions that are like supportive of him, it's guys like St. Brown, like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Like it's the big name guys that are all like, this kid's gonna be great. It might take a little time. And so I'm looking at, because they get to see more than we do, right? And they know the game at a more intimate level than we do. And they seem very confident in him. And maybe that's just them sticking up for their teammates. Or maybe there's something to it, because they all seem to go kind of out of their way to make sure they're talking positively about him. And so I'm still in the I think he can be something, but I'm also not unrealistic either. His hands got to get better. His routes have to get a little bit sharper. But hey, look, Teddy's coming in to mentor him.
Teddy wants to take him on as his
Yeah.
mentee.
And that's one of his things, right? And that's something he's done for a long time. And they were already out there. Teddy already kept him after practice. Like usually J-Mo kind of like he does his practice, he goes in and he gets his rehab and he cool down and stuff, and then that's it. Teddy kept him out, made him work. And when you've been in the league as long as Teddy has, like what, 9 years, 10 years, right? Like you can say, hey, you're sticking out here with me because I want to get more work, and the kid's got to listen, first round pick or not. And so yeah, I think that's good for him. I think any additional reps he can get, I think will be better. And especially when they're coming from veteran quarterbacks, it just is going to make everything a little easier for him down the road.
Enough on Williams, because when week 7 rolls around, he'll be on the 53-man roster. There's
Yep.
no arguing that. Now, for the five guys that did play, where it's up in the air, Antoine Green, Chase Kota, Dylan Drummond, Maurice Alexander, Trey Quinn, four of those guys really made an impression in the game. Chase Kota probably had the nicest game running routes and catching passes. Dylan Drummond, everybody was excited to see because of the local product, and he caught a couple of passes. Antoine Green, he didn't shy away, three catches, 36 yards. Then Maurice Alexander makes the big splash, returning a punt for a touchdown, and that makes everybody think, like, well, this guy was the USFL's, best return man. Here he is returning a punt for a touchdown. But then at the same time today, the Lions extend the contract of and give him a bump in pay of Khalif Raymond. So and I don't think that Khalif's job is in any jeopardy anyways with
No.
Alexander's trying to make his case that, like, hey, I can be a valuable guy. This is what I can do. This is what I can bring to the table. Here's four guys, though, who are all making their case.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that we didn't see much of Quinn was because he got hurt as well, kind of flew under the radar there, but he ended up getting released with an injury settlement, and he cleared waivers. He's back on, and now he's on injured reserve. So, but yeah, I thought all four of those guys played well. It was Green and Drummond who got the start with J-Mo, and I think that follows suit for what we've seen in camp. Those guys seem to be ahead of Alexander and Kota. J-Mobe was, of course, the primary target. I think with Drummond, what was interesting about him is the very end of the game, they gave him a kick return as well. And then he got face masked. He catches it like 7 yards deep, right? And he runs it out when he probably shouldn't. And then he gets face masked and they end up getting a big gain out of it.
Yeah.
But I think if Maurice Alexander isn't going to make the team, they're going to test some of these guys out that they think are going to make the team as potential kick returners. And I think Drummond is one of those guys that they're going to say, hey, we want to see if you can also just like be serviceable as a kick returner, because you have a good shot of being like in the top six wide receivers on this roster. I also like Green quite a bit. I thought he showed a little bit, he showed more burst, more catch, and then just turn right up field immediately and gain some yardage after the reception. Those are things we saw early in camp. Those are things we saw in the spring that got me excited about him. And so he flashed a little bit of that. The one he caught down the seam in the slot was a good example of that. I do hope that he's trending back, because I like his upside quite a bit. And with, you know, injuries to guys like Mims and Benson, this is his time to try and assert himself back higher in the lineup.
One thing I got to mention at last about Williams and Sudfeld. Do you think Sudfeld behind closed doors with his coach, is he saying things like, well, I kind of focused in on Williams because like, hey, we need to get the ball to him. And that kind of was screwing me up in the game. Do you think he had that going for him?
I don't know. Because like, remember we talked like last week, we talked about the fact that he ISOs in on certain guys. Yeah. And then
he was kind of nudged that way by the coaching staff. It's like, well, get Williams all the work he can, you know?
Right. No. Yeah. I do think like there was probably some plays designed to try and get him open. Like the first one very well could have just been get JMO the ball on the first play. And at the same time, I do think that's one of Sudfeld's weaknesses though, is he gets a locked on a guy and then he just keeps going back to that guy, that guy, that guy. And it's, you seemed like JMO had like seven targets, I think, on the game. Right. And so I don't know if that was on Sudfeld, if that was on coaching, I don't know. It's hard to tell, because the coaching part would be understandable, but again, we've seen Sudfeld make those errors in camp earlier, so could be him as well.
All right, going to the tight end position, Darryl Daniels didn't play; he's out with the injured. So Brock Wright, Sam Laporta, James Mitchell, Daniel Helm all played. Now, before we dig into the tight ends, because it's really not too much to dig into here, Daniel Helm, right? Mm-hmm. You're a Detroit sports fan traditionally. You are not a young, I mean, well, you're not, well, you're young in comparison to a World War II veteran, but, you know, we're aging now.
Yes.
But you do remember Detroit Red Wings teams from the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
They had a player named Darren Helm,
yes,
who I believe is part of the organization now. Like, I believe he works in the front office. But Darren Helm wore the number 43.
Oh, yeah?
Daniel Helm wears the number 43. I don't believe they're related in any way. But here's two Detroit players playing on separate teams, you know, a good decade apart from each other. Same last name, same number. You know, I don't know if anybody's talked about this yet. I know this is probably a total nonsense thing to say. And maybe there's only 8% of the listeners be like, oh, that is interesting. And the rest of them are like, okay, why are we even talking about this? Wasn't that odd?
I had not put that together.
I think it's kind of odd.
I think in my mind, I was looking at the fact that they're using pretty much all of their 80s numbers in the 80s. Yeah. And when they go to a secondary number for the tight end groups, they typically go to the 40s. That's all I was thinking. And then I just thought 43 was there because, yeah, I didn't think I didn't put them. It's I don't know. Probably pretty slim.
And unless, you know, here you make a point. Like, what if there's a Lions equipment manager? I don't know if you know who the Lions equipment manager is, but do they have like this knowledge? And like, well, you're a Helm. We'll give you the number 43. You know, because maybe Helm's like, well, I don't know what number to wear. And who knows? That's just speculation on my behalf, but it had to be mentioned.
Okay.
That's probably the most we'll talk about Daniel Helm this season, right?
He committed two penalties, it wasn't really a great night.
Not going to see him for long. Brock Wright, one reception. James Mitchell, three receptions. Everybody's high on Sam Laporta, even without any receptions.
They went to him on fourth down just outside of their own red zone. So that shows you the level of trust they have with him. I guess the ball got knocked away, or it looked like it was close enough to get knocked away. When I was watching live, it looked like a drop, but some of the angles I've seen since have said looks like the defender got a hand on it. Again, though, I think it speaks to – I'm more focused on the fact that he was the guy that they were targeting on fourth down, and that speaks to their confidence in him. We know what Brock Wright is. He played like 8 or 9 snaps, and then he was done. Mitchell looked good. He shows you his value of being able to like block and then leak out and then, you know, fall into the flat. That little like fake block then peel back out into the flat off of play action, that's a staple in their offense. And he did that twice in that one drive, right? And then like I was calling for it. I was even calling for it as they were got in the red zone. I'm like, just do that again because they can't defend it, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that shows really how Mitchell can be used, and he can be a sneaky like asset, I think, to be able to deploy as a tight end. You know, throw a third tight end out there, and defenses may not be keen on that, and then you can get some big plays out of them.
So that's pretty much all we have to say about the tight ends. You know, last year they trade away Hockenson. Everybody's all concerned. It's a fine little group they have.
Oh yeah, certainly. Yeah, I think all three guys are going to be good.
All right, offensive line. The big names, Taylor Decker, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, Hal Vitae, Pede Sewell, Graham Glasgow. Not a one of them saw a snap of action. What Correct. We did get, the first grouping was Matt Nelson, Darren Paolo, Ross Pierschbacher, Colby Sorsdahl, and Jermaine Ifedi. We did lament the first play of the game because Matt Nelson did get owned and allowed Nate Sudfeld to throw an interception. All the linemen, you know, Connor Galvin, Cody Awosika, Brad Cecil, Bobby Hart, Obina Azay, Ryan Swoboda, Max Percher, this whole group.
Mm-hmm.
Not very great.
No, I thought, okay, so I thought Nelson and Paolo were bad. I thought, and then Pierschbacher gets hurt. And then he has to be replaced by Cecil. Cecil, you could see he's undersized and lacks some anchor. I thought Sorsdahl was moving some bodies. I thought Ifedi was moving some bodies. Azay looked okay. Hart looked okay. Awosika looked okay. I didn't think Galvin looked good either. Swoboda and Piercer, they played two snaps. That was it, the two of them. They only played the kneel down. So, like, those guys are just – hanging out as the only two guys on the fourth string, right? Like they didn't get any run. And so I don't think that doesn't speak really well to their status. I would say right now. Yeah. And now Piercer is the international guy. So he's going to stick around, but I think Swoboda's got to, you know, light a fire under his butt if he wants to even make the practice squad at this point. So a couple of good players, a couple of average players, a bunch of bad players. For me, maybe this probably pushes Ifedi ahead of Matt Nelson a little bit, or maybe at least puts him in that conversation. I think the two of them are fighting for one spot. I think Sorsdahl kind of solidified himself. And then I have no idea who the ninth offensive lineman will be. Will it be like Matt Nelson loses his job to Ifedi, but then gets OL9? And then is he even worth keeping as OL9 if he's going to play the way that he did? So I'm hoping to see more as they get on the field over the next two games. But it left a lot to be desired overall, both offensive lines, the first and second teams there.
watching a game like this, and I'm sure Bob Quinn didn't watch Friday's game, but do you think he sits there a little bit and he's like,
You mean Brad Holmes?
no, Bob Quinn.
Oh, okay, good.
Like, this team's offense turned itself around last year. This team's offense is considered, probably one of the top five of the NFL. And look what happens when you take those four guys that I got onto this team, take them off that offensive line, watch them putter around for four quarters. They have to get 7 points from, or they get 6 points from a punt return. They only really muster 15 of their own points. And it's got to burn them a little bit. It's like, that's the reason why this offense is good. The linemen.
Here's the thing. It's actually five guys because he drafted Graham as well.
Yeah, but Graham left. it's fair. It's fair.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, yes, I do think it's interesting because, like, the offensive line is like their identity, right? Like the entire offense and what they can do all stems around the fact that what they can do with their offensive line. And Penei Sewell is a huge catalyst in how that offensive line
they
works.
They needed him. It was the offensive line, even, and many people argue that, I mean, you and I were on the one side of, we think Penei Sewell is really good. We think he's only got room to grow still. Like, he could potentially be the best offensive tackle in the NFL. We think that's the ceiling. A lot of people don't necessarily agree with us when it comes to that. We're like, yeah, he's okay, but he's not as great as everybody says. But he was vital to solidify the line from left to right. Now there's, there's really no holes. And even though you could say the Evan Brown was a hole or Hal Vitae's guy, but they're not. Both of them were actually not bad players,
Yeah, but I mean, but what Sewell can do athletically, the way he can pull from the right tackle, like the stuff that he can do, just it's rare. And so I think he really just expands what they can do in so many different ways. But yeah, look, the offensive line is their identity. They've got six good ones. They look like they have a seventh in Colby Sore still. And then after that, they're looking for guys to step up and beat out the other guys for the positions. They're going to keep a tackle, could be a Fetty or Nelson. And then we'll see if they keep nine or not, or if they just deem it the player hasn't played his way onto the roster and they'll stick with eight. I don't know. Minimum eight, though. They need eight in order to get the roster breaks on game day. So we'll see if they go 9-0.
Long term, it's a story to watch, as the season wears on. Like, this is, if you look at holes in the roster, on offense, there's really not a lot of them. Like, I guess another playmaker is a wide receiver, but here it is, like, reserve offensive lineman. What happens if a couple of those guys up front get hurt?
Yep.
All right. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. When it comes to the interior tackles, only Aleem McNeil got Friday off. So we did see Isaiah Bugs, Benito Jones, Broderick Martin, Levi Onwuzurike, Christian Covington, Chris Smith, and Corey Dirt. And we got to see the seven of them. I believe it was Jones and Bugs were starting, right? If I have that right, if I remember seeing
that's
that.
Correct. Yep, that's correct. And then Martin came in and did a little splitting. Bugs only played again like 9 snaps. Like, he got the Brock Wright treatment. He only played a handful. And a lot of Levi, once Bugs left, then Levi started getting some more run up early. I thought Levi had a really nice game. I thought Jones played well. Martin flashed, right? He flashed a couple of really good plays, run stuffing. Pad level still a bit of an issue for him. But again, like, those are things that we knew heading into the game, and he kind of showed that. I'd love to see a little bit more power and splash, because we have seen that in camp. We didn't see like a huge splash play, but that's in there. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, because now you're starting to talk about, are they going to keep four defensive tackles? It went from, are they going to keep three or four defensive tackles, to now it's, are they going to keep four or maybe even five? Because it's going to be tough to cut Levi or Benito, because Benito's playing well and Levi's heavily invested in. And I thought they both played I thought they both played well on Friday. But roster cutting here for that defensive tackle four spot's going to be really tight, and I do think Levi and Benito are going to make a real competition out of this thing. And like I said, they're both in good spots right now.
The whole defensive group held the Giants to just over 80 yards rushing. So it looked pretty good. Yeah, not a bad. Yeah, this is one where, you know, once again, we got to get a couple more weeks out of it.
Yeah.
Right. But you are right about Jones is playing pretty good. And Christian Covington even made a couple of plays out there.
Yeah.
On Friday. But I don't think he's making the roster. I don't even know if a guy like Covington was a veteran, right? Like, would he even be a practice squad type of guy?
Well, the practice squad rules are you can keep like a certain number of veterans. Doesn't matter how they change those rules so that you can keep a guy who's a 10-year vet if he was willing to sign for that. So Covington is technically eligible. There are limits on how many of the veterans they can keep. But, you know, I don't even know. Maybe he might think he can catch on somewhere else too if he doesn't, you know, stick in Detroit. So we'll see. He's got to stack some more game or some more positive plays and games in order to really be it firmly in the conversation, because Levi and Jones are both playing real well.
Heading to the edges, Aiden Hutchinson, Charles Harris, our starters, both got the week off. So we saw Josh Pascal, John Kaminsky, Romeo Okwara, James Houston, Julian Okwara. John Kaminsky right off the bat showed off why they made a good decision in keeping him around.
Yeah.
This season. You know, like he's just solid. He's solid and he's effective.
Yeah. He does, and again, he is one of the catalysts that make the defensive line flexible. He allows them to go between four and five man fronts effortlessly. He may not technically be a starter because of Charles Harris, but he's going to play probably starter level snaps. Like you said, he's steady, he's reliable, he's consistent, he's getting
nothing
better.
Flashy, but he's there. He's consistent, you know. They can put him out there.
Yep, exactly. And so like he's going to be he's important. He's really important to what they want to do. And I thought Pascal, who's like the heir apparent to that role, I thought he's looking better as well.
The Aquarius combined for four sacks.
Yeah, and I think Romeo technically got the start, but he was also playing in the fourth quarter. So it's like, you know, I think they clearly know where Hutchinson, Harris, Kaminsky, and Pascal are going. I think those four, they all know what they can do. And then I think when it comes to the end of the edge guys, it's going to be which two of those three make it, or do all three make it? And, you know, how does it shake out? I think James Houston is getting runs late because he's not consistent right now. That's why he's getting runs late. Is he not going to make the roster? Look, no. I mean, he's going to make the roster.
Like, they can't put him on the practice squad once team will just grab him.
No way. Yeah, there's no way. I mean, like, could he be a guy they look to trade? I don't know, maybe. But, like, he's repping late because they want him to be more consistent. He's a player with 100-plus snaps in his NFL career, and they want – and he's still trying to get to a level where he's the same player all the time. And right now he's just not. That's why he's repping late. He's got to make the team. I don't think there's anybody out there, even those – who are, you know, being called critical of James Houston. Like I'm getting blamed for reporting on how he's inconsistent, but like, I'm not saying he's not going to make the roster. He's been in my 53 projection every single time. In our bubble watch, I have him in every single time. He's too good in my mind not to keep him. But he's too inconsistent to rep higher than what he's doing now. And so he's kind of like the JMO of the defense, where fans have this perception of him where they think he's almost infallible. And that's just not accurate. He is learning. He's a young man, and he's got less than half a season under his belt. This is not uncommon. There's a reason he didn't get on the field that much at Florida. There's a reason he had to go to Deion Sanders, and Deion said, "Look, hey, you're not even ready to play off the ball with here, so we're going to put you on the edge." He's just not there yet. He can he get there? Absolutely. he's just not there yet. Now, Julian, he's also been wildly inconsistent. And then all of a sudden he happens to hit on a day where he's like, hey, look, this little dip swim pass rush move that I have is working. And he used it 3 times and they didn't have an answer for it on any of them. And he just got home. And great for him for capitalizing on that. At the same time, he's beating the Connor Galvins of the world. You know what I mean? Like, Julian should be beating Connor Galvin on a regular basis. Like, he just should. And so, did he flash enough to say, boy, we can't get rid of him? Or is he making a case for another team? Does it become more tradable? Does trade value increase? Like, I mean, who knows? When you have to weigh Julian versus like another roster spot, you're going to have to add in things like special teams. And again, that's another area where I think Julian is improving. But the consistency is just, it needs to improve. I think Romeo repped late because they really didn't have anybody else to play his kind of spot. You know what I mean? Like that kind of down guy.
They're in a weird spot in a way because
they don't have a lot of depth because they know
they don't need. What are they going to evaluate?
Right, like, exactly.
They have the best back end ends in the group of ends in the NFL. If that makes any sense.
Yeah,
you know, they're 5 through 7 defensive ends are probably better than anybody else's 5 through 7 defensive ends. Are there 1 through 4 defensive ends as good as anybody's in the NFL? No, they're still trailing behind. But way at the back end, they're pretty good. So they're in this weird spot right now.
It's the way I look at it is Julian and Houston play the same spot, and Romeo is the other side. And those are the guys that you're evaluating late. And so that's why Romeo both started and ended the game, you know, in the preseason, is because they didn't have anybody else to keep in on that spot. I still think Romeo's safe. There are kind of, you know, people speculating if maybe he's vulnerable. I just think he's too valuable in what he does. Positional range, can dip inside, can stand up. He can do so many different things. For me, I'm sticking with Romeo in Houston, and then hoping to see Aquara really challenge another player for a spot on the roster, or Julian challenge someone for a spot on the roster.
How much do they have to pay Romeo to go away if they wanted to?
Well, he's the way that it works now is that they have, because they're past June 1st, the voided money that they have set aside to next year stays next year. So no matter what, that 3.5 that he on the voided year is coming due next year, whether he makes the team or not.
Right.
So he's getting paid 5.6 against the cap.
Oh, that's
and
it.
I think, so he costs $5.6 million against the cap this year. If you release him, I think you free up like $150,000. Like, it's like nothing. It's like a wash.
Not a lot of value doing that.
Right. So the only thing you're gaining really by cutting a guy like Romeo is a literal spot on the roster. Because you're not doing it for financial purposes.
Yeah. All right. That's worth noting too, because I was wondering if that would play into it at all. Linebackers, moving back to the linebackers. Starter, Alex Anzalone didn't play a spot in the lineup as assured. Malcolm Rodriguez, Derek Barnes, they were the starters. We saw Jalen Reeves-Maven, Jack Campbell, Anthony Pittman, Trevor Nowaski. Campbell's going to end up starting. You might not start week one, and I know the value of the word start is doesn't really mean too much, but like Jack Campbell's going to have – if everybody remains healthy, he'll have the second most snaps at linebacker this year out of anybody on the roster.
Yeah, his instincts, you can see him. He was flashing, he was hitting, he overran one of his gaps one time, but he was able to recover. I thought Barnes played well.
Yeah, he did. He's gotten better.
He has. And I think he's put himself in that conversation. The problem is just, Jack is just too good. Like, he's just,
he's
just
more athletic and bigger investment attached to him. Like, everything's in his favor at this point. Hey, things can change, but the way it looks right now, it's like, yeah, they're not going to play him. You know, they're not going to put too much on his plate for now, but it's only a matter of time.
It's kind of crazy. This is the deepest group at linebacker we've seen since we started covering the team on this podcast.
I would agree.
And, I think just being able to add, like, they were comfortable going into the season with Alex, Derek, and Malcolm as like their top three. And then Reeves Maven was going to be their four. And so the fact that they were now able to add Jack, who's a starter level linebacker, that's just a bonus. And that's what good teams do. Like, they're like, hey, we're set here, but we're still going to add this guy because this guy's talent, we think, is just, he's just the better talent overall. And even though we think we're set, he's going to help us get better. And so we saw that at another position here we'll talk about in a minute. But I thought Campbell played very well. I thought Malcolm's going to play, but he's not going to start. But he's going to have a role, and he's going to contribute in different areas. He's going to play on special teams. Like, Malcolm's not going away. And I thought he's playing better. But if Malcolm is – if you have a player at Malcolm's level as linebacker four, you're in a good spot. You're in a good spot. Like, this is it. I'm a lot more encouraged now about the linebacker group than I was at the draft or even after the draft. I really like what they've been able to put on the practice field, and you're starting to see the fruition of, like, long-term development with Derek Barnes and Jack Campbell getting thrown into the fire, and you're starting to see, like, the investments you've made over the last 2 years at the position starting to blossom.
Anything to mention from Pittman or Nowaski or even Reeves Maven?
Reeves Maven, I thought, was up and down. He flashed some ability to play downhill, but he's always been able to really do that. That's part of his, what makes him such a great special teamer, is he can play downhill like crazy. I thought we saw that again. He gave up a touchdown in coverage. Was not bad coverage, but he was behind where he needed to be. But again, you're talking about linebacker five at this point in a core special teamer. Pittman is in the conversation because he's a four-phase special teamer who plays a ton of reps, and he has a lot of positional versatility as well. The question for me will be probably between Pittman and Akwara or Julian. Can Julian show me enough on special teams that he's worth being edge seven versus a dynamic special teams player that's linebacker six? You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be an interesting debate for me to decide between. I know how much this staff values special teams, and so I do think Pittman might have the edge here, but we'll see how we get. Again, two more weeks to see how this plays out. Nowaski is I like what he does. I think he's still maybe a little bit away from being able to contribute, but he's got a lot of really cool skills that are translatable to the NFL. And so if he can stick around on the practice squad, he'll be another guy that we'll have to see where he is in a year, and maybe he'll be good.
Outside corner. Well, wait. So Nowaski's a hang around on the practice squad all year.
That's my guess.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, look, he'd have to really do something special to kind of jump Pittman to me.
Outside corners. Cameron Sutton, Jerry Jacobs. We didn't see him play Friday. We did get starters. Starling Thomas V. So here's your guy, Eric. He's the starter's first time out in a preseason game. Will Harris, Khalil Dorsey, Stephen Gilmore, Tay Hayes. Those are the five we saw at the outside corner.
Yeah, and Tay Hayes was released after the game, so it's really the four that we'll talk about here. Starling, I thought, looked solid. He also had a key block on Alexander's punt return for a touchdown,
solidifying a spot on the team.
He's starting at important spots on special teams. He's showing he can play outside. He's got the skill to play at nickel too. They just haven't exposed him to it yet because I think they're really wanting him to focus on being an outside guy right now. But this is a guy who's going to have a Jerry Jacobs-like career, in my opinion. He's going to be a guy that could threaten to start in like a year or two. And he's going to push the guys behind him. Track level speed that translates to the field, instincts, toughness. He doesn't back down from anybody. There's just so much to like about him. And he's locked into the roster for me. And I'm interested to see if maybe he can jump Will Harris and end up being outside corner 3 until Mosley returns. And then, you know, then he'll be outside corner 4.
Will Harris looked exactly the same as he always does.
Yeah, he's at his ceiling, right? Like he is not developing more. He is what he is. He's a position versatile player who can play inside, who can play outside. The thing with Will is that I don't think he's ever going to get better than he is. And so that kind of caps his long-term, capabilities. Like, is he a guy that you're going to want to keep long-term, or do you need a succession plan? And if you're going to keep a succession plan, I've got a guy who I think is going to be the next, you know, Will Harris position versatile player.
And that is?
Well, I can talk
about. Or are you just saying that in general?
No. I've got a guy. Yeah, we're going to talk about him when we talk about the nickels, though. Yeah.
Gilmore, Dorsey, do you think either of them has a shot of making the 53 man?
I think Gilmore's close, but he's still making rookie mistakes. Gilmore's a guy that I could see making the practice squad, then getting called up kind of late in the season, like as like injury type replacements.
I was going to say injury replacement at corner, they get to play pretty early.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I envision with Gilmore. I think he's solid enough that you could call him up for the practice squad to play in a game as a reserve. But he's still making enough mistakes that I don't think he's going to make the 53. Like his upside, could use some development.
All right. So we'll go to the position now of nickel corner, slot corner, inside corner, third safety, however we want to look at this. Yeah. CJ Gardner-Johnson did not suit up, not play on Friday. We've got Brian Branch, Chase Lucas, and Brian Branch made his presence known immediately.
he's a monster. He's going to be so good. Like, it's just a little taste of what he can do right there. Cole Beasley is no slouch, and he was playing well against Cole Beasley. If he can cover those like quick twitch veterans, then he's going to play a lot better against the slower, bigger, you know, younger guys as well. Like, he's ready to take on, you know, these veteran savvy kind of slot guys. Like, he's ready. He's off the college football field, right onto the pros, ready to go. This is another example of, hey, we have Gardner Johnson that we think is going to play in the slot, but Brian Branch was too good to pass up. But now you put Brian Branch on the field, and he's just too good to even that. He's going to start. Like, this is what I think is going to happen. I think Gardner Johnson is going to get pushed to safety, and I think he's going to push Tracy Walker for a spot. And it's in your starting safeties might end up being Gardner Johnson and Joseph with Brian Branch in the slot, because right now Brian Branch is playing out of his mind. Like, and the great thing is about Branch is he's thinking he's not playing well still. Like, he's still coming off the field like, yeah, it wasn't my best game or my best practice, or yeah, I'm in a funk right now. I think I can do better. And he's playing great. He's making splash plays every time he's on the field. And there's a reason he was a top I don't even remember where he was on my board. I had him as like a top 14 or 12 or something like that. I got him way up there. He's been everything that you want. And that play on Beasley where Kaminsky pushes Beasley and slows him down a bit and then just allows Branch to tee him up, just that's textbook. That's stuff you're going to see on Sundays starting week one.
Now, what about your other – well, a lot of people are beaming about Brian Branch, so
yes.
I don't know. There's not much else to say at this point. Let's hope he keeps up rolling into the season. Yeah. Shea Stukas, who used to be your guy. Now he's getting passed by all these other guys.
No. See, I still think Chase is – I think people are still are sleeping on Chase Lucas. I love what he does. And I think he is not yet at his developmental ceiling. And he has the positional range that Will Harris does, except Chase Lucas may actually be able to play safety, where we know Will Harris can't play safety anymore, right? That's why he's only playing at corner. Chase, to me, is probably going to be your reserve nickel. Now, maybe if something happens to Branch, Gardner Johnson slips back in the nickel, that's probably what would happen. But Chase is a guy that he can be out there in dime sets. He's running high on special teams, and he's so position versatile. I think he is a better version of Will Harris, who is not yet capped out on his potential. And so I don't think he's a guy that they're going to be too keen to get rid of. I know there's a ton of people that, you know, are down on him. For me, I'm not, and I don't think the coaching staff is either. And if I'm out here on this island by myself with Chase, that's comfortable. I'm fine with that. I'm comfortable. I have a pretty good track record of evaluating defensive backs. So I like what I see. I like the player and I like the future. So I'm still very much on the Chase bandwagon. I just, I can have two guys, him and Starling, that I just think are have bright futures ahead of them.
All right, let's move back to the safety position. Kirby Joseph, Tracy Walker, we didn't see either of them. We did see a Joseph. We saw Brandon Joseph as well as Savion Smith, Ife Melifonwu, and Brady Breeze.
Yeah, Ife and Savion started, played about half the snaps, and then Breeze and Joseph wrapped the game up. Savion looked real good on special teams. If he looked good on special teams, he played okay at safety. Breeze looked good on special teams again. Like, these guys are all special teamers in a lot of ways. And then Joseph has the interception to close the game out. Now, could he have just knocked the ball to the ground because it was fourth down, but they would have got the positioning better?
Oh,
I mean,
fill up that stat sheet. His career might be short.
For him, absolutely, you make that pick, right? Absolutely. But if Gardner, you know, if there's a veteran back there, maybe they were like, yeah, we'll just take the ball. We're up, you know, 20 yards more. But that's neither here nor there. I think Ife and Savion are fighting a numbers game and each other, right? If you're keeping, like, okay, assuming the five defensive backs that rested are all in, Sutton, Gardner Johnson, Jacobs, Walker, Joseph, assuming those five guys are all in, then you add in Will Harris, Starling, Branch, like, now you're up to eight guys. Well, you probably only got a couple spots for like two more of these guys, right? And so I'm putting Chase in, which means I'm down to like one between Ife and Savion. And I could see them going either way. If he's got a high investment tag with that carries with him, a lot of athleticism, but also a very long injury history. Savion's got superior special teams, a great comeback story. He's a guy who can play in a lot of different spots. And so be interesting to see how these two battle it out. And then they may also be fighting against Anthony Pittman and Julian Aguara for like the last spot or two on the roster and because of special team rules. So like, we're going to see where they go, but those two guys are very much battling each other. Less, like I said, the roster as well, a roster spot as well. And, Breeze, I thought played well on special teams, but I don't think there's much he can do at this point. He'll be a guy that sticks around on the practice squad. Joseph could be in that same boat. Enough there to, value keeping around, but his shot at the 53, it would take him jumping a bunch of bodies before he can get close to that 53 at this point, I think.
53-man roster. Got to have a kicker, got to have a punter, got to have a long snapper, down to 50. Got to have at least two quarterbacks, we're down to 48. So your last 40, and you're going to have 10 offensive starters, so you're down to 38. Yep. You might have 30 guys on your final 53-man defense.
Oh, you mean just the defense?
Yeah, I'm we're sitting here as of right. I mean, and it's early, so it's fine. It's like, but right now we're looking at 12 defensive linemen, potentially. You could argue 11 or 12 defensive backs, and then six linebackers. And obviously that won't be the mix, but
my guess is it's going to be 10 defensive backs, 10 defensive linemen, and six linebackers, and that'll give you 26, so you go 24 on offense. But that's my lean right now. I could also see them lose a defensive back first, or a linebacker if they need to keep an extra offensive lineman or something like that. But that's kind of my rough numbers. I'm kind of seeing like a 10-6-10 kind of distribution on defense, but we'll see, give or take one.
All right.
Special teams.
Jack Fox, three punts. They're averaging over 50 yards. Kick, no reason to see him. They have no other punters. We have no choice.
He's amazing.
Scott Daly, really, you didn't screw anything up, so that's fine. Riley Patterson, John Parker Romo, both made their field goal attempt. Neither of them was a difficult one. Yeah, they were both under 40 yards. I think Romo had the extra point. The one extra point.
Yes. Yeah. Romo had the extra point. And then Romo had three kickoffs.
In the second half.
Patterson had one, and then one of Romo's went out of bounds on a weird technicality. And for me, there's not a ton separating the two of them beyond experience, and the coaches love the experience that Patterson has, and so I think that's really going to give him an edge. And so I'm still leaning on Patterson. We may get the guy that we identified a year ago and liked a year ago. He may end up being the kicker this year. So I'm predicting Patterson is probably going to win this battle unless something drastic happens over the next 2 weeks.
All right. And that's it. That's the wrap up for week one of the preseason. You mentioned the Lions. They're down in Duval County, Florida right now. They'll start practicing.
No, they're here. They're here.
Oh, they're still here. Playing. Are they playing the Jaguars here? Are they playing them down in Florida?
No, here. It's here again.
Why did I have that reversed in my head?
I'm not sure. They play joint practices in Allen Park. The game is on Saturday at Ford Field. The last preseason game is in Carolina. But no joint practices there.
Mid-90s expansion teams.
So Jacksonville's going to be an interesting test because it's a different kind of team, right, than what they saw with the Giants. Giants are a little bit more physical. The Jaguars are a little bit more skill-oriented. They've got arguably a better quarterback. They've got better skill, offensive skill players. And
we won't see any of what you're talking about practice.
But we'll see him in practice. So what Campbell has said is that there's going to be more one-on-one stuff than what we saw with the Giants, which I think actually favors the Jaguars in a lot of ways. But there's going to be some interesting matchups. Like, for example, when Christian Kirk is on the field, he's going to line up opposite Brian Branch, and that's going to be fun. Like, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited for some of these matchups. I think it'll be fun to see how it all plays out. And So I think there's season ticket holders get to watch Wednesday's practice, general admission for Thursday's practice, and then everybody will get to see the game, both local and national, which is nice on Saturday. But again, I expect it kind of to play out like what we saw. Heavy focus on some of their younger guys and a lot of rest for their starters.
All right. Looking at Apple Podcasts, we got a couple of new reviews. We got a written review by Doug the Lion. Very nice of him.
Nice.
Very complimentary. Got a boost on Spotify as well. Up to 195 reviews there. Thanks for giving us the reviews. Really appreciate them. And, you know, thanks for listening as well.
Yeah, you know, I think now that we'll be back weekly, hopefully the word will spread out again. And
we'll our people's sure phones will just be reminded that, hey, we had a subscription to this show and they're making episodes again.
But I have heard nice things on social media as well. People excited that we're back in our conversations again. And so, yeah, won't be long. We'll have a couple more podcasts about, you know, for the rest of the off season, and then before you know it,
we're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, it's gonna be here before you know it.
Yeah, that's great. This is what we've been waiting all year for. So that's it. That's all we got. So until next time, let's go Lions.